This is Toby Sumter with your CrossPolitik Daily News Brief for Friday, January 31st, 2020. Rod Dreher at the American Conservative asks, did you hear about Goldman Sachs' newest diversity policy? Reporting from the New York Times, he says Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon announced on Thursday that his plan is to require IPO clients to have at least one diverse board candidate before the bank helps them list in the public markets. This is a big deal because in the IPO world, Goldman Sachs was the top underwriter of U.S. offerings last year. We're not going to take a company public unless there's at least one diverse board candidate with a focus on women, Mr. Solomon told CNBC at the World Economic Forum in Davos. The mandate will start July 1st for U.S. and European clients, and then starting next year, Goldman will require two diverse board members. Except, as it turns out, this new policy will not apply to Goldman Sachs itself, for some reason, and it will also not be applying to China. Tucker Carlson had a great segment on this nonsense on his show earlier this week. And this is just the latest push for diversity within corporate America. Jeff Green of Bloomberg notes the money management firms BlackRock and State Street also plan to vote against directors at companies without a female director. Not only this, but the California-based public companies with all male boards face a $100,000 fine. Oh boy. Okay, what I want to do for today is actually walk you through a bit of the Senate impeachment hearing. The impeachment hearings continue in the Senate with apparently hardly anyone really caring, except Senator Ted Cruz has started a podcast called The Verdict that has shot to the top of the podcast charts, where he chats with Michael Knowles at the end of each day of the Senate trial, the first episode apparently being recorded around 2:30 a.m. after the first day of the Senate trial finally finished back on January 21st. I mean, who doesn't want to hear Ted Cruz talking to Michael Knowles at 2 a.m.? That's kind of exciting. One item of note this last week was the testimony of Alan Dershowitz appearing to present arguments in defense of President Trump. What's striking is that Alan Dershowitz appeared in the Richard Nixon trial of 1973 and 1974, as well as Bill Clinton's impeachment trial in 1998 and 1999. And Dershowitz is a lifelong Democrat. He is also a legal professor. He was Ted Cruz's professor at law school, in fact. And Alan Dershowitz also has the claim to fame of being involved in the O.J. Simpson trial. He notes his support for and the fact that he voted for Hillary Clinton in his defense statement for the Senate hearing. Dershowitz insists, by noting that his defense of Trump and the Constitution is completely nonpartisan. And he says he would be making the exact same defense of Hillary if she had been elected and had been brought up on the same charges of impeachment. Dershowitz summarized the job of the Senate under three basic issues. Quote, "In exercising that power, the Senate must consider three issues in this case. The first is whether the evidence presented by the House managers establishes by the appropriate standard of proof, proof beyond a reasonable doubt, that the factual allegations occurred. The second is whether, if these factual allegations occurred, did they rise to the level of abuse of power and or obstruction of Congress? Finally, the Senate must determine whether abuse of power and obstruction of Congress are constitutionally authorized criteria for impeachment." Dershowitz largely steps over the first one and spends most of his time focusing on the second and third ones, but he does so by going back and giving significant historical context for the process of impeachment. For instance, he says, "I will ask whether the framers would have accepted such vague and open-ended terms as abuse of power and obstruction of Congress as governing criteria. I will show by a close review of the history that they did not and would not accept such criteria for fear that these criteria would turn our new republic into a British-style parliamentary democracy in which the chief's executive's tenure would be, in the words of James Madison, the father of our Constitution, quote, at the pleasure of the legislature. That's going to come back again in one of his following comments. Dershowitz cited the impeachment trial of Andrew Johnson in the aftermath of the Civil War in 1868. Y'all remember that one, right? President Johnson was impeached by the House of Representatives on February 24th, 1868, and the Senate tried the case in a trial that lasted from March until May 1868. In the end, the Senate voted to acquit President Andrew Johnson by a margin of 35 voting guilty to 19 voting not guilty, which was only one vote short of the two-thirds needed to convict and remove a sitting president. Wow, that's some politics for you. Dershowitz noted that a number of articles of impeachment were brought against President Johnson, including, quote, attempt to bring into disgrace, ridicule, hatred, and contempt and reproach of the Congress of the United States, unquote, that sounds a little familiar, as well as, quote, denying that Congress was authorized by the Constitution to exercise legislative power and denying that the legislation of said Congress was obligatory upon him, unquote. Dershowitz cites the presiding judge, the then Chief Justice Curtis, who stated, quote, my first position is that when Congress speaks of treason, bribery, and other crimes and misdemeanors, which is exactly what the Constitution requires, it refers to and includes only high criminal offenses against the United States. Notice he doesn't say Congress. Made so by some law of the United States existing when the acts complained of were done. And I say, he continues, that this is plainly to be inferred from each and every one of the provisions of the Constitution on the subject of impeachment. Dershowitz continues now, the late Justice Antonin Scalia gave the following current example. So he's quoting Scalia now. If one speaks of Mickey Mantle, Rocky Marciano, Michael Jordan, and other great competitors, the last noun does not reasonably refer to Sam Walton, who was a great competitor, but in business, or to Napoleon, a great competitor on the battlefield, unquote. Applying that rule to the groups of words, treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors, the last five words should be interpreted to include only serious criminal behavior akin to treason and bribery. So Dershowitz goes on in his statement on the Senate floor to insist that abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, which are the two charges that the House has brought to the Senate that they convicted Trump of, he goes on to insist that those two charges, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, simply are not crimes akin to treason or bribery or similar high crimes and misdemeanors. Dershowitz again. We just heard that in 1970, Congressman Gerald Ford, who I greatly admired, said the following in the context of an impeachment of justice. Quote, an impeachable offense is whatever a majority of the House of Representatives considered it to be at a given moment in history, etc., unquote. And Dershowitz continues, you all know the quote. Congresswoman Maxine Waters recently put it more succinctly in the context of a presidential impeachment. Here's what she said. Impeachment is whatever Congress says it is. There is no law. But this lawless view, this is Dershowitz again, this lawless view would place Congress above the law. It would place Congress above the Constitution. For Congress to ignore the specific words of the Constitution itself and substitute its own judgments would be for Congress to do exactly what it is accusing the president of doing. Okay, I added the word exactly, but would do what it is accusing the president of doing. And no one is above the law, not the president, not the Congress. Again, that's Dershowitz. This is from his statement of defense on behalf of President Trump on the floor of the Senate during these impeachment hearings. A little later, Dershowitz again. Some framers, such as Roger Sherman, wanted the president to be removable by the national legislature at its pleasure. Okay, that was an argument put forward on the floor of the Constitutional Convention. Dershowitz continues, much like the British prime minister can be removed by a simple vote of no confidence by Parliament. So that was one form that was a possibility. And Dershowitz says that view was rejected. Benjamin Franklin opposed decidedly the making of the executive, quote, the mere creature of the legislature. Ben Franklin recognized that that would make the president's term completely dependent on the pleasure of the legislature. And if you got sideways with the legislature, they could impeach you at any given time. Dershowitz again. Among the criteria proposed were malpractice, neglect of duty, malconduct, neglect in the execution of office, and this word we'll come back to, maladministration. It was a response to that last term, a term used in Britain as a criteria for impeachment, that Madison responded, quote, so vague a term will be equivalent to a tenure during the pleasure of the Senate. So again, Madison objected to the term maladministration because it was too vague. Upon hearing Madison's objections, Colonel Mason withdrew maladministration and he substituted, quote, other high crimes and misdemeanors. That's how we arrived at the language that we find in the final form of the Constitution. Later, Dershowitz arrived at a relevant and contemporaneous issue. He said, even if a president, any president, were to demand a quid pro quo as a condition to sending aid to a foreign country, obviously a highly disputed matter in this case that would not by itself constitute an abuse of power, consider the following hypothetical case that is in our news today as the Israeli prime minister comes to the United States for meetings. Let's assume, this is Dershowitz again, a Democratic president tells Israel that foreign aid authorized by Congress will not be sent or an Oval Office meeting will not be scheduled unless the Israelis stop building settlements. Quid pro quo. I might disapprove of such a quid pro quo demand on policy grounds, but it would not constitute an abuse of power. Quid pro quo alone is not a basis for abusive power. It's part of the way foreign policy has been operated by presidents since the beginning of time. Well, that's quite a claim. The claim that foreign policy decisions can be deemed abuses of power based on subjective opinions about mixed or sole motives that the president was interested only in helping himself demonstrate the dangers of employing the vague, subjective, and politically malleable phrase abusive power as a constitutionally permissible criteria for the removal of a president, unquote. Now, if you've been following the news at all this week, you know that there were headlines of a bombshell early in the week regarding former National Security Advisor John Bolton's forthcoming book manuscript. The news actually broke last Sunday night in the New York Times, but Dershowitz thinks it's all a big nothing burger. We also know that it is still being considered, as I record this news brief, whether the Senate will actually call witnesses, and of course, John Bolton is on the short list of those who might be called if the Senate votes to actually call witnesses. In his comments to the Senate on Tuesday, though, Alan Dershowitz continued specifically speaking to the John Bolton bombshell. Now, it follows from this that if a president, any president, were to have done what the Times reported about the context of the Bolton manuscript, that would not constitute an impeachable offense. Let me repeat, nothing in the Bolton revelations, even if true, would rise to the level of an abusive power or an impeachable offense. That is clear from the history. That is clear from the language of the Constitution. You cannot turn conduct that is not impeachable into impeachable conduct simply by using words like quid pro quo and personal benefit, unquote. I found the whole speech incredibly fascinating, not only because of Dershowitz's background and who he is and who he's defended and what he's been involved in, but also it's full of constitutional history, constitutional law, and a number of particular instances and episodes that he refers to. I would encourage you to check out the links, which you can find in the text of the news brief, which you can do every single day of the week when we drop these news briefs. We generally have the text, and there are links in the text if you ever want to follow up on them and find out more. I would encourage you to read the whole speech by Alan Dershowitz that he gave in defense of President Trump during the Senate trial hearing this last week. This is Toby Sumpter with your Cross Politic Daily News Brief for Friday, January 31st, 2020.